He told CBS News that most of the alerts had gone to children who were flooding our offices with phone calls. Donald Trump has long harbored grievances against Facebook, now known as Meta. In 2017, Trump tweeted, "Facebook was always anti-Trump, and in the wake of his 2020 election loss to Joe Biden, Trump took issue with $400 million in donations made by Facebook founder Mark Zuckerberg and his wife, Priscilla Chan, to non-profit organizations supporting local election offices around the country during the pandemic. The donations paid for ballot drop boxes, equipment to process mail-in ballots, recruiting poll workers and voter information campaigns on voting safely during COVID pandemic, three initiatives that were opposed by Donald Trump and his allies. Trump's false claims on Facebook and Instagram that the 2020 presidential election had been stolen from him resulted in a two-year account suspension imposed by Facebook parent company Meta. Since he was reinstated in February of 2023, Donald Trump and his campaign have been using Meta's platforms for fundraising. In 2020, while he was still president, Trump said he intended to ban TikTok, citing emergency powers to target TikTok's parent company ByteDance. He signed an executive order banning U.S. companies from transactions with ByteDance, stating that data collection threatens to allow the Chinese government access to Americans' personal and proprietary information, potentially allowing China to track the locations of federal employees in the United States and federal contractors, and building dossiers of personal information. Donald Trump told CNBC that he met with Republican megadonor and ByteDance investor Jeff Yass recently, but said the two did not discuss TikTok. Jeff Yass owns a 15% stake in ByteDance. According to Donald Trump, Jeff Yass never mentioned TikTok during his meeting with Trump. Meanwhile, President Biden told reporters last week that he would sign the legislation if it is passed by Congress. CNN Cable News Network has also covered the same story and tells us more. Facebook once again finds itself in the crosshairs of former President Donald Trump, and that's making some traders on Wall Street rather nervous. Meta Platforms, the owner of Facebook and one of the stars of the recent market rally, fell about 4% on Monday, 11th of March, after Donald Trump called into CNBC and labeled Facebook an enemy of the people. Meta shares also retreated 1.2% on Friday, following a post by Donald Trump on Truth Social platform, where the former president blasted Facebook as a true enemy of the people. Meta's market valuation has dropped by more than $60 billion since Donald Trump's attacks began on Thursday evening, 7th of March. No major news appeared to drive the Meta sell-off other than the condemnation from the former President of the United States. If it has everything to do with the comments from former President Trump, Gil Luria, an analyst at D.A. Davidson, told CNN, Facebook has gone through waves of being dragged into the political debate, and it never bodes them well for that. Facebook has gone through waves of being dragged into the political debate, and it never bodes well for them. Donald Trump surprised many last week by reversing his stance on TikTok and coming out against a ban on TikTok that many in Congress, including many Republican congressmen, are pushing for. But why? Trump argues that banning TikTok would help Facebook, a company the former president has a long history of battling against. The thing I don't like is that without TikTok, you can make Facebook bigger, and I consider Facebook to be an enemy of the people, along with a lot of the media, Trump told CNBC on Monday, 11th of March. Facebook imposed a 2-year ban on Donald Trump in the wake of the 6th of January 2021 Capitol riot. Meta reinstated Donald Trump's Facebook and Instagram accounts in February of 2023. The Associated Press has also covered the same story and tells us more. House Republicans are moving ahead with a bill that would require Chinese company ByteDance to sell its subsidiary TikTok or face a ban in the United States, even as former President Donald Trump is voicing opposition to the effort. House leadership has scheduled a vote on the measure for Wednesday, 13th of March. A Republican congressional aide not authorized to speak publicly said that's still the plan and there has not been significant pushback to the bill from lawmakers. A vote for the bill would represent an unusual break with the former president, Donald Trump, by House Republicans. But the Speaker of the House, Mike Johnson, and others have already forcefully come out in favor of the bill, and dropping it now would represent a significant reversal. It's an important bipartisan measure to take on China, our largest geopolitical foe, which is actively undermining our economy and security, the House Speaker Mike Johnson declared last week. Donald Trump said on Monday, 11th of March, that he still believes that TikTok poses a national security risk, but is opposed to banning the hugely popular app because doing so would help his rival Facebook, which he continues to lambast over his 2020 election loss to Joe Biden. Donald Trump said, frankly, there are a lot of people on TikTok that love it. There are a lot of young kids on TikTok who will go crazy without it. Trump was speaking on CNBC's program Squawk Box. He added, there's a lot of good and there's a lot of bad with TikTok, but the thing I don't like is that without TikTok, you're going to make Facebook bigger, and I consider Facebook to be an enemy of the people, along with a lot of the media. When I look at it, I'm not looking to make Facebook double the size. I think Facebook has been very bad for our country, especially when it comes to elections.
النقي means the pure, the immaculate, the clean. الهادي means the guide. All the imams came for guidance.
السلام عليكم يا أهل بيت النبوة وموضع الرسالة ومختلف الملائكة.
Peace be upon the directors of right guidance, the lanterns in darkness, the patterns of piety.
This is Dialogue, an introduction into the most important dialogues and conversations of Imam Ali ibn Muhammad al-Hadi alayhi salam. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. This is Dialogue. I'm your host Mahdi. Imam Ali ibn Muhammad al-Hadi alayhi salam was a pure source of wisdom and knowledge. Despite his young age, he showed what divinely gifted knowledge really looks like. Imam al-Hadi alayhi salam was the direct descendant of the Messenger of Allah, peace and blessings upon him and his holy household. Imam al-Hadi alayhi salam was also the 10th divinely appointed Imam, and he was the 10th divinely appointed successor of the Messenger of Allah, peace and blessings upon him. Imam al-Hadi alayhi salam was also the son of the 9th divinely appointed Imam, Imam Muhammad ibn Ali al-Jawad alayhi salam. After Imam al-Hadi alayhi salam answered with the answers of an expert the most difficult of questions posed to him by the Shia scholars and jurisprudents, the Shia leaders at that time had more faith and certainty now of what they had previously believed, that a divinely appointed Imam must have the most knowledge and he must be the most knowledgeable one of his time, regardless of whether he is young or old. And so the knowledge, virtue, and the delving into the sciences of the Holy Quran and the Sunnah of Imam al-Hadi alayhi salam astonished the minds and sparked meetings and gatherings in all parts of the Muslim world. At this moment, we invite you to listen to parts of the Arabic text of Ziyarat Jamiatul Kabira by Imam Hadi alayhi salam, along with its English translation. Please stay tuned.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. As-salamu ala a'immatil huda wa masabih at-tuja wa a'lam at-tuqa wa dawin nuha.
In the name of Allah, the Most Compassionate, the Most Merciful. Peace be upon the directors of right guidance, the lanterns in darkness, the patterns of piety, the owners of understanding, the endued with thought, the havens of the peoples, the inheritors of the prophets, the perfect specimen, the most excellent call in the arguments of Allah against the inhabitants of the world, the hereafter and the former world. Allah's mercy and blessings too be upon you all.
Wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. As-salamu ala mahal.
Peace be upon the exponents of the recognition of Allah, the centers of Allah's blessing, the essence of Allah's wisdom, the keepers of Allah's secrets, the bearers of Allah's book, the successor of Allah's prophet, and the progeny of Allah's messenger. May Allah send blessings upon him and his household. Allah's mercy and blessings too be upon them.
Wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Peace be upon the Imams, the leaders, the guides, the chiefs, the authorities, the defenders, the protectors, the people of the reminder, the men in authority, the left ones by Allah, His select, His party, the case of His knowledge, His argument, His path, His light, His proof. Allah's mercy and blessings to be upon them.
Wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
IRIB English Radio. Our website is parstoday.ir.
You can email us at englishradio@irib.ir.
Welcome back. It's an honor and a blessing to have you with us. You're listening to Dialogue on IRIB English Radio. So, dear friends, we're talking about the dialogues of Imam al-Hadi alayhi salam. In this dialogue, which by the grace of Allah we have been covering for quite a few programs now, because the dialogue is quite lengthy, we find that Imam al-Hadi alayhi salam was talking about compulsion, free will, their absoluteness, and how the reality is that this is a matter in between these two matters, and this is a bain al-amrain, as it is known in Arabic. This is what the actual situation is. It is neither absolute compulsion, neither is it absolute free will, but it's something that is in between the two. After talking about compulsion in a lengthy discussion and talking about free will in a lengthy discussion and refuting both of them via logical reasonings in the Holy Quran, we find that Imam al-Hadi alayhi salam then proves the concept of the matter between the two matters, this amrun bayn al-amrain, if you wish. And he says that we, the Ahlul Bayt alayhim as-salam, the divinely appointed Imams alayhim as-salam, peace and blessings upon them all, we say that Allah the Almighty created people by His power. So now you're talking about a certain kind of compulsion, and then gave them the ability of obeying Him. Now here we're talking about a certain kind of free will, keeping in mind that neither of them are absolute. So once again, Allah the Almighty created people by His power and gave them the ability of obeying Him. He ordered them to do what He wanted. Right? Again, this is a kind of compulsion. And forbade the people from what He, Allah, wanted to forbid them from. Again, in continuation, a kind of compulsion. And then Imam al-Hadi alayhi salam says that Allah accepted from the people their obedience to His orders. And He was pleased by their obedience. He was satisfied, happy by their obedience. And Allah prohibited them from disobeying Him, dispraised and put down, if you will, the disobeyers, and punished them for that. Allah is the one who has the choice of enjoining upon people doing some things that is pleasing to Him and forbidding the people from other things that Allah hates. It is Allah who punishes for disobedience due to the ability, this free will, that Allah has given to His people by which they obey Allah and avoid His prohibitions, because Allah is just, fair, wise. So, subhanAllah, I think this is a good place where we can end this whole discussion of compulsion and free will in this one conversation that Imam al-Hadi alayhi salam has. His Eminence has other conversations where he talks about the same issue. Again, as we said in many of our programs regarding this specific conversation, that these discussions were there because these were very confusing matters, and even in the present day. But alhamdulillah, we have reached this point where we have been proven, or it has been proven to us by Imam al-Hadi alayhi salam, that it is a matter between the two matters. This is Dialogue, Imam al-Hadi alayhi salam. Thank you very much, dear listeners, for listening to this episode of Dialogue. Don't forget to visit our website at parstoday.ir/en/call of Islam page, where you can find all of our previous programs and many other great programs as well. Until another episode, fi amanillah, and God bless you all.
A diverse range of programs. Spirituality. Eastern Tales. Roundtable Discussions. Culture. Politics. All produced by IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
Just 2 weeks before his first criminal trial is scheduled to begin in New York, former U.S. President Donald Trump has once again sought to delay the start of his hush money trial. We take a look at the U.S. media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. National broadcaster CBS News has covered this story and tells us more. Just 2 weeks before his first criminal trial is scheduled to begin in New York, former President Donald Trump has once again sought to push back its start. In a motion filed on Thursday, 7th of March, and made public on Monday, 11th of March, Donald Trump's attorneys asked Manhattan Judge Juan Merchan to delay the trial, which is currently set to start on 25th of March. Trump's attorneys asked the Manhattan judge to delay the trial until after the Supreme Court rules on whether Trump is shielded from criminal prosecution by presidential immunity in another one of his criminal cases. Lower federal courts found that no such immunity exists, and Donald Trump asked the Supreme Court to review those rulings last month. The justices agreed, and arguments are scheduled for 25th of April. The adjournment is warranted to ensure proper adjudication of the presidential immunity defense and to prevent improper evidence of official acts from being used in the unprecedented fashion apparently contemplated by the people, wrote Donald Trump's attorneys. They pointed to the court filings by the state indicating that prosecutors plan to enter several pieces of evidence from 2018, when Donald Trump was in the White House. The New York case stems from a hush money payment made by an attorney for Donald Trump to a film actress, Stormy Daniels, whose real name is Stephanie Clifford, in the days before the 2016 presidential election. Donald Trump is charged with 34 felony counts of falsification of business records tied to payments reimbursing the attorney, Michael Cohen, in 2017. Donald Trump has pleaded not guilty and denies all wrongdoing. Trump previously sought to have the state case moved to federal court in 2023. A federal judge rejected that effort, writing that he didn't believe the reimbursements were tied to Trump's service as president. Reimbursing Michael Cohen for advancing hush money payments to Stephanie Clifford cannot be considered the performance of a constitutional duty, wrote U.S. District Judge Alvin Hellerstein. Falsifying business records to hide such reimbursement and to transform the reimbursement into a business expense for Donald Trump and income to Michael Cohen likewise does not relate to a presidential duty. District Judge Alvin Hellerstein also wrote that Donald Trump has expressly waived any argument premised on a theory of absolute presidential immunity. Trump has argued that his payments were official acts, an argument repeated in his latest court filing. There are several types of evidence that implicate the concept of official acts for purposes of presidential immunity and therefore must be precluded, his attorneys wrote. A spokesperson for Manhattan District Attorney Alvin Bragg has declined to comment. National broadcaster ABC News has also covered the same story. Attorneys for former President Donald Trump asked the judge overseeing his New York hush money case to delay the trial while the U.S. Supreme Court weighs Donald Trump's presidential immunity argument, but the judge pushed back in an order made public late on Monday, 11th of March. Donald Trump's attorneys are scheduled to argue before the Supreme Court next month that he's immune from prosecution for conduct that occurred whilst he was in office. In asking for a delay of his hush money trial, currently scheduled to begin on 25th of March, Donald Trump has not argued the charges should be dropped over the immunity claim, but that the trial be put off and prosecutors be precluded from introducing evidence. President Trump respectfully submits that an adjournment of the trial is appropriate to await further guidance from the Supreme Court, which should facilitate the appropriate application of the presidential immunity doctrine, in this case to the evidence the people intend to offer at trial, defense attorney Todd Blanche wrote on Monday's court filing. New York Judge Juan Merchan, however, criticized the timing of Trump's request and ordered that the former president seek permission before making future motions before the 25th of March trial date. Defendant does not explain the reason for the late court filing, a mere 2.5 weeks before jury selection is set to begin, Judge Juan Merchan said in his order. He gave prosecutors until Wednesday to respond to Donald Trump's request for an adjournment. Going forward, Judge Juan Merchan ordered that the parties need to file a one-page letter explaining and justifying any requested relief before filing a motion. After giving the opposing party one day to respond, Judge Juan Merchan said he would decide the request by setting a briefing schedule or considering the one-page letters as the motions themselves. Effective immediately, the parties are hereby directed to obtain leave to the court before filing any additional motions prior to 25th of March 2024, Judge Juan Merchan wrote. The Supreme Court announced last month that it will hear oral arguments in April on whether Donald Trump can claim sweeping presidential immunity for actions taken whilst in office, after Trump asked the court to decide the matter in the face of special counsel Jack Smith's federal election interference case against him. In their motion, filed on Monday, 11th of March, Trump's lawyers said prosecutors plan to introduce documents and testimony relating to a time period when Donald Trump was in office, including statements posted to Twitter about Michael Cohen.
This is A to Z. An introduction into Islamic lifestyle. Today's lesson, how are we purified in the holy month of Ramadan? Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. So dear friends, it is such an honor to be here. Holy month of Ramadan. What a beautiful month indeed. Yes, it is a little bit difficult and there are some trials and hardships that come along with the holy month of Ramadan. But by the grace of Allah, it is a month which is the holiest of months. It is the most beautiful of months. It is the month in which the Holy Quran has been revealed. It is the month in which we find the nights of Qadr, the Laylatul Qadr, these nights of Qadr, of course, of destiny, of power, of fate. This is such a beautiful month to be witnessing in our lives. So we're talking about how we are purified in the holy month of Ramadan. Now, of course, these are discussions which, you know, they can last hours, but we try our best to kind of condense them as much as we can with the help and the grace of the Almighty Allah. So how does the holy month of Ramadan purify us? And one thing that we want to keep in mind, because we're always talking about achieving that pure and blessed Islamic lifestyle, is that all of the things that we learn in the holy month of Ramadan or that we do in the holy month of Ramadan are things which we should continue and at least try our best to implement in our Islamic lifestyle in the months that are non-holy month of Ramadan, if you will. So in the rest of our life, we should be able to inculcate these things that we learn in the holy month of Ramadan into our Islamic lifestyle and really make it a part of our Islamic lifestyle.
Ramadan al-mustabin jaa bin-nur al-mubin. Ramadan, Ramadan, Ramadan al-qanitin.
Welcome back. This is A to Z on IRIB English Radio. So, dear friends, we're talking about how the holy month of Ramadan purifies us. Again, this is a very, you know, extensive subject. It's not something that you can easily cover in a few minutes. But primarily, you know, if we go to the core and the essence, I guess there are two things. Really, it's really one thing. So let's just kind of start with the one thing and then explain how it's two things. So the one thing is that it establishes and brings us closer to the Almighty Allah. So this is primarily how it purifies us. The ultimate end result is that we become closer to the Almighty Allah. But something under this is this idea that because we stop eating and drinking, what that does is that it separates us from the materialistic aspect of our own selves and of the world. So when we disconnect from the material aspect of ourselves and the material aspect of the world, then clearly the result is what we just spoke about, which was this stronger spiritual, metaphysical connection with the Almighty Allah. Now, of course, the only way that you can connect with Allah is if you disconnect with everything that is not Allah. Now, that is, I guess, the very essence of what we're talking about. Of course, the discussion is open to many other different things, but this is how we are purified in the holy month of Ramadan, because we end up cutting ourselves off from these very base and material aspects of ourself, so that our spiritual aspect can become strengthened and become powerful and establish a very beautiful connection with the Almighty Allah.
IRIB English Radio. Our website is parstoday.ir.
You can email us at englishradio@irib.ir.
in the limelight.
The British government will announce a plan to increase gas power capacity by providing extra certainty to investors that plants have a long-term future, even as Britain moves away from fossil fuels. We take a look at some of the world press and media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. British newspaper The Guardian has covered this story and tells us more. Prime Minister Rishi Sunak risks further criticism from Green campaigners after throwing his weight behind the building of new gas-fired power stations, saying he will not gamble with our energy security. The government will announce a plan to increase gas power capacity by providing extra certainty to investors that plants have a long-term future, even as Britain moves away from fossil fuels. Ministers said it represented a common-sense decision to ensure power supplies kept flowing during the transition to net zero. They argued that gas plants were a safe and reliable source of energy when weather conditions did not power wind and solar farms. The government claimed that the move would not impact net zero targets. However, critics are likely to see it as a backward step in the wider push to decarbonise Britain's power network through renewable energy projects. Some big energy firms have deserted the gas industry in recent years to focus on renewable energies, which have a more certain future. Last year, gas accounted for 32% of Great Britain's electricity generation, ahead of 29% from wind power and 14% from nuclear power. The last remaining coal-burning plant at Ratcliffe on Soar in Nottinghamshire is due to close in September. Renewable industry backers argue the investment in battery projects which can store electricity when weather conditions are unfavourable is vital to make the system more reliable. The Energy Secretary Claire Coutinho is expected to set out a strategy for gas at a speech at the think tank Chatham House in central London in the coming days. She will say, without gas backing up renewables, we face the genuine prospect of blackouts. Other countries in recent years have been so threatened by supply constraints that they have been forced back to coal. Claire Coutinho, the Energy Secretary, added, there are no easy solutions in energy, only trade-offs. If countries are forced to choose between clean energy and keeping citizens safe and warm, believe me, they'll choose to keep the lights on. British newspaper The Daily Mail has also covered the same story. Jess Ralston, an energy analyst at the Energy and Climate Intelligence Unit think tank, says the UK Secretary of State suggesting that if Britons cannot control energy prices, then they are not secure as a country, while announcing new gas power stations has a real irony about it. Jess Ralston added, anyone paying an energy bill in the past 2 years knows that the United Kingdom doesn't control the price we pay for gas, that international markets decide. Energy security has shot up the political agenda since Russia cut off gas exports to Europe after the start of war with Ukraine in 2022. European sanctions against Moscow have left countries scrambling to secure new supplies of energy, and household bills have soared. Britain's Prime Minister Rishi Sunak says we need to reach our 2035 goal in a sustainable way that doesn't leave people without energy on a cloudy, windless day. I will not gamble with our energy security. The Prime Minister's intervention appears to be his latest effort to win votes by pushing back on green policies. The switch to green power has also become a contentious political point, with the Conservatives pledging to decarbonise power generation by 2035 and Labour by 2030. Both political parties envisage gas-fired plants will play a small part in providing backup power supplies even after those dates, as Britain prepares for a surge in electricity demand despite recent delays to renewable energy and nuclear projects. The Shadow Energy Secretary, Ed Miliband, said, "Of course we need to replace retiring gas-fired stations as part of a decarbonised power system, which will include carbon capture and hydrogen playing a limited backup role in the system." But he said the reason the Tories cannot deliver the lower bills and energy security we need is that they're specialists in failure when it comes to our clean energy future, persisting with a ludicrous ban on onshore wind, bungling the offshore wind auctions and failing on energy efficiency. Juliet Phillips of the climate think tank E3G says, "Due to policy failures over the last parliament, the government has missed opportunities to build out the full offshore wind pipeline, to make gains in energy efficiency or address clunky network connection times, all factors that mean new gas plants have been announced." Britain's Energy Secretary Claire Coutinho plans to claim that the laws ensuring new-built plants are net-zero ready will be broadened to encompass hydrogen, allowing gas plants to switch to a new fuel source. Power plants are already due to command record prices to keep the lights on after an auction recently. Rules will also be updated around the capacity market, which sets prices for payments to electricity generators, to incentivise gas plant operators. Ministers do not now plan to introduce lower emission limits in the market for new built and refurbished executive plants until 2026 at the earliest. However, one chief of gas plant operators said the changes were unlikely to trigger a new wave of plants. They said, "In reality, we can keep updating plants which are nearing the end of their lives at relatively low cost." Energy Secretary Claire Coutinho's speech coincides with a second consultation on review of electricity market arrangements, a set of wide-ranging changes. It is expected to propose zonal pricing, which will allow renewable energy developers to charge higher rates if they build wind and solar farms close to cities, where demand is greater. Separately, the industry regulator Ofgem said on Monday 11th of March it was concerned that costs linked to net zero could disproportionately hit lower income consumers. English Radio, a window to peace of mind and spirituality. you can tune in to RIB English Radio 24 hours a day. We are with you. Are you with us? Are you with us? Are you with us? This is our voice from the heart of the Islamic Republic of Iran, RIB English Radio.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints
همه با وجود غده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم
All of us are opposed to the cancer's tumor, Israel
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
The dawns of the month of Ramadan should not be missed. The annual Ramadan Quranic meeting, April 30th, 2019. In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful, I sincerely thank the dear brothers, and I've really benefited from your recitation today. It is a very good, beautiful, and meaningful meeting with diverse and mellifluous recitations, and I thank God for this. When we see that each year the signs of progress in reciting the Holy Quran are visible among our youth and our people, this makes me very happy, and I thank God for this. Thanks to these good recitations, today's meeting was very meaningful, significant, and delightful, particularly because of the good point that our talented and eloquent presenter raised regarding the offering of these recitations and what was achieved in this meeting to the pure souls of the martyrs who were buried in Tehran recently. Reciting the Holy Quran in a good voice and tone and by observing the requirements and conventions of recitation is an introduction to the entrance of Quranic concept into hearts. However, if we merely benefit from this aspect of the Holy Quran, and if we only look at it as an act of recitation and beautiful singing, we will surely be demoted from this lofty rank and position.
دنیای اسلام یک نسخه امروز دارد و اون اتحاد.
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
The purpose of all this emphasis on reciting the Holy Quran in a good voice, in a beautiful tone, and by observing the requirements is that Quranic concepts influence hearts, that we establish a close relationship with the Holy Quran, and that we take a Quranic mold and color. If this is the goal, then it has certain requirements and conventions. The first convention is that the reciter of the Holy Quran should recite the book by believing in the Holy Quran and the concepts that he is reciting. If we do not know what we are reading, if we do not understand the concepts, and if it does not influence us in a deep way, then our recitation will exert little influence on others and on us. This is the first condition. I request that the Honorable Qura, Quranic experts and reciters of the Holy Quran pay attention to this point. First, they should review in their minds the ayahs that they want to recite. They should deliberate on them and truly absorb the depth of these concepts in their hearts and their belief.
Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done for me through all my years I've been lost.
Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Rubashavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Poreza, London.
Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
Saeed Amin Alemi, Kabul.
Shahana Bhatt, Indian administered Kashmir.
Round the world with reporters.
An annual meeting of Quran reciters and memorizers with the leader of the Islamic Revolution.
Every year on the first day of the holy month of Ramadan, leader of the Islamic Revolution receives top reciters of the Holy Quran to stress the importance of this very holy book in the lives of Muslims.
In the meeting, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei described the recitation of the Quran as a sacred art, while underlining that the primary objective of this very valuable skill should be to convey the meaning and message of the Quran to the public and society and create the ground for contemplation of the Holy Scripture. Elsewhere in his speech, Ayatollah Khamenei expressed his satisfaction with the abundant number of young Quran reciters in the country, viewing their increase as a blessing of the Islamic Revolution. Meanwhile, referring to the crimes committed by the Zionist regime in Gaza, the leader pointed out that the peak of resilience that is being witnessed in Gaza presently stems from a profound familiarity with and adherence to the teachings of the Quran. Before the meeting, young and experienced reciters and memorizers were very much excited to listen and take a glimpse of the leader.
I am very much excited to recite some verses of the Holy Quran in the presence of the leader. But this is a great opportunity for me to see the leader.
This is the third time I have the honor of attending such a great event. Today I am going to have supplications to recite about the holy month of Ramadan.
Other reciters were worried about the people of Gaza who are observing the holy month of Ramadan amid the Israeli bombing and shelling campaign.
The month of Ramadan is the month of mercy and blessing. I do believe that during this month, the Zionist regime will face a big defeat.
At the end of the ceremony, the Quran reciters and memorizers held congregational prayers led by the leader of the Islamic Revolution and broke their fast together. Saman Kujuri, Tehran.
Iran, Russia, and China have conducted the main phase of a joint naval drill dubbed Maritime Security Belt 2024. After arriving at the northern part of the Indian Ocean, the vessels of the three countries practiced different operations. The joint drills took place in 17,000 square kilometers of water in a region that is an internationally crucial hub for energy and trade traffic. The first phase of the naval drills included live firing at designated surface targets in the Sea of Oman. Various vessels and fast attack crafts from the IRGC were also involved in the exercise. The vessels were armed with the state-of-the-art homegrown advanced weapons. The next phase included the Photo X exercise and offensive formations. The helicopters of the Islamic Republic of Iran Navy and the IRGC monitored the region in all stages of the exercise. Iran's Navy commander hailed the exercise as a successful endeavor to improve maritime cooperation of the contributing countries. The commander also said that Iran expects the drills to expand in the future.
This year, as we expected, regarding the types of vessels participating in the exercise, both China and Russia have increased the variety as well as tonnage of the vessels. So hopefully, we expect more countries to join the drills in the future, especially regional states.
Admiral Irani also stated that regional nations have the capacity to confront piracy and terrorism by enhancing cooperation. The exercises are the latest in joint drills by Iran, China, and Russia. Iran says regional countries are most welcome to take part in the drills that are going to take place in the future. The Islamic Republic has time and again stressed that regional countries are the ones that are truly in charge of establishing security in the region. Mahdi Abbasian, Konarak.
On the first day of the holy month of Ramadan in Nigeria,
the Islamic movement held a rally through the streets of the capital, Abuja, in a peaceful protest against the massacre of innocent civilians in Gaza. The protest march took the demonstrators to the gate of the United States Embassy, where they sat down and submitted a letter of protest condemning the Israeli genocide in Gaza and U.S. involvement in the killing of innocent Palestinians.
America is one of the major party in this killing of innocent female and children in Gaza. Since October 7th to date, they have killed 31,000, more than 31,000 innocent people, majorly female and children in Gaza.
The demonstrators blame the United States and British governments for using their influence to block a UN resolution calling for a ceasefire. They said every decent government has condemned the Israeli terror attacks on the Palestinians, but the U.S. government has continued to support the mass murder of innocent Palestinians.
They are killing female and children. They are imposing starvation on innocent female and children. Babies have been seen under rubble, crying inside blood. We see a lot of fathers carrying a lifeless body of their children killed by Israelis. Anybody that has concern for humanity should come out today on the street and show his solidarity with Palestinians.
The demonstrators burned the U.S. and Israeli flags as they slammed Tel Aviv's regime impunity and the silence of the international community. Many Muslims in Nigeria believe that Israel's continuous killing of Palestinians in Gaza on the eve of the holy month of Ramadan is a clear proof of the regime's disrespect for Islamic sanctities. The protesters here are urging world leaders to pressure Israel to end the massacre in Gaza. Danjuma Abdullahi, Abuja.
Britons treat their National Health Service, better known as the NHS, with an almost religious reverence.
Grow up using the NHS from the cradle to the grave, free at the point of use. And that has tremendous significance for our lives.
But today, this eternal source of national pride is under increased scrutiny, with new figures showing more than 120,000 people died last year in England alone from delays in life-saving treatment. The NHS is a state-funded healthcare system founded in 1948. Back then, it cost around $20 billion in today's money to run. Last year, the government spent more than $181 billion. Despite that, more than 7 million people are now on the waiting list in England alone. That's nearly 12% of the population having to wait at least 52 weeks for a health consultation.
Our politicians aren't really serving the public interest. They are serving a neoliberal agenda, which is to transfer the country's natural assets and wealth to overseas corporations like United Health of America and other big multinationals.
The government has promised to cut the long queues, but has made little progress. The situation is no better in the rest of the kingdom. In Scotland and Northern Ireland, 1 in 80 people, and in Wales, 1 in 20, are having to wait more than a year for treatment. There's also the energy costs and inflation that has reduced the value of the NHS budget, meaning it now has to do more with significantly less. Add to the mix a shortage of staff, which means more pressure on exhausted employees.
We've had more than a decade of defunding since the financial crash. This has led to a real terms wage cut for staff. The whole population, the health needs have gone up.